Welcome to Heaven's Edge. What form of nutrient exchange is appropriate for your life form?
An ale, I guess?
Sympathizing ale?
Thanks. Let's try it. It's actually pretty good.
Attention spacers, welcome back to another thrilling episode of Adventures in the Void. We are a sci-fi tabletop role-playing game discussion transmission. I am Jay.
And I'm Ross.
Join us as we trade tales and celebrate the beauty and wonder of the cosmos.
Welcome to the Adventures in the Void Spacecast. My name's Ross McClure. Here at the Spacecast, we talk about indie science fiction tabletop role-playing games. And I'm joined with my friend, Jake.
I am still your friend, right? I mean, I know it's cost us 5 years of our lives, but look, they have peaches here.
Those are not peaches.
The fact that they have Earth peaches here.
First.
What do you call them?
I can't pronounce that.
Okay, well, that's why
also,
I call them peaches.
How come you like never peaches. Tried to find me?
I mean, I did. I'm not going to lie, I did. But, you know, traveling out here is expensive, so I just gave up. I mean, like I said, they have peaches, and I don't know what else you need.
Maybe that was a better idea. I killed a man with three eyes. And took his ship. And that's how I got around.
You mean you killed a man that had three eyes, or you killed a man with three eyes?
What?
Did you kill the man, and your device of murder was the eyes itself, and you used three
eyes?
Yeah,
isn't that obvious?
Well, I mean,
I
guess.
You've been here for a while, you know how it works
around
here.
Maybe not to everyone. That's true.
All right, I got my podcasting stuff back, so maybe we could just get back into the groove of things. Maybe, I don't know, and maybe we can find a way home someday. But so, science fiction. Like, how did you, in tabletop role-playing games, I think I know the answer to this, but how did you get started? What's your origin story with science fiction, with tabletop?
Tabletop science fiction. I mean, that came from tabletop war games. Tabletop war games, specifically X-Wing Miniatures, the X-Wing Miniatures game, like from Christmas of 2014 when it first came out to like all the way up till this last, I want to say 2021 was the last time I played it. But yeah, that game revolutionized gaming for me. It kind of opened my eyes to what this hobby can be, and the community surrounding it was just a super wholesome thing. Me and a good friend of mine, we actually made a podcast just specifically to talk about the game itself, so somebody out there might have actually heard me from that before, but I highly doubt it because it's a very niche thing, and I haven't played since it's updated. The game itself has, you know, changed hands as the parent company handed it off to a different company, so now the people that created it don't even own it anymore, and it's under different development. I think it's like a 2.5 version of the game, which is fine, and they have objectives now, which is great, but yeah, so let's go back to our topic. The way that it introduced Star Wars in a tactile and tactical way, it just made it feel so It just was so immersive to me to be able to flip my shield tokens up and down and have that be that way. It's basically the tabletop version of Star Wars Squadrons, you know, the video game. But having that be there and the tactical element of it, the bluffing of your dial, and it really felt like you were being a pilot there. But yeah, when it comes to like sci-fi on tabletop, that's my introduction. It's very crunchy. The systems are, to me, there's this correlation between complexity and science fiction to me that I feel like crunchy mechanics are just scream sci-fi to me. So I look for that in my RPGs too.
I remember back when you were doing that podcast, another thing too was that, and you were still playing the game, playing it less because like then the pandemic hit and stuff shortly after, but
right, and I had yeah. children too, so
but you were I remember listening to the podcast, and another aspect that I recall isn't just like there was the feeling of being a pilot on the mechanical end of like bluffing and trying to do a maneuver and the tension and not knowing how it would, you know, play out, but also there was the lore. Like, you know, the stories, you know, exactly what we're talking about here with tabletop role-playing games where you have a cohesive narrative, but there was story. There was like lore and characters and stuff upon which the game would take place.
Right, yeah, because the game is on the IP of Star Wars, and Star Wars just has this plethora of lore.
But then, like, your ships would, like, have specific pilots and stuff from the lore, too, right?
Yeah, and some of them will be just, like, a name, and you're like, who is this person? But you find out there's some novel that was published several years ago that has that same name in it. Like, oh, this person actually did something. This person isn't just a name that somebody made up, but actually has lore to it. So, yeah, that was kind of how our podcast separated itself from the other podcasts about the same game, was having the lore side be our spinoff and diving into it. Because, yeah, a lot of people, you know, Star Wars is a bigger hobby than outside the game, and we were able to tap into that. And yeah, the lore is so fun to have that be relevant in everything that you do. Have that feedback into the game. Like, you know, Han Solo is, you know, never tell me the odds. So one of his abilities is to reroll his dice. And that just is kind of funny. But yeah, the way that all the mechanics kind of feed back into the game, I don't know, there's a lot of value in that game, and the way that everything is thought out and designed, the whole game is kind of cohesive, and I've always appreciated that about the game. The game has just outgrown me, so to speak, and now as I approach the game, there's been several waves of new ships with new cards and new combos, and they reformatted the point values, so rebuilding your list and your squadron has to do these different calculations and stuff. They reformatted the whole game, and it's kind of outgrown me, and it's sad because I still would like to play it, but it seems even more complex now, and I just don't have the time to devote what I did then to the game, because it's much easier to instead write 5 rooms of a dungeon, and then I'm done, and then I can just enjoy several hours of fun out of a small amount of prep time, whereas that game... a lot of the like armchair thoughts that I have now about D&D and stuff and RPGs in general, that time was spent, you know, armchair list building. I think players who play Warhammer can kind of have that same thing, where list building is a hobby unto itself, where, you know, making sure that you have the right squadron here, making sure you have the right loadout with this certain character and that kind of stuff. There's a lot of joy to be found there. I get the similar joy out of playing games like Gaslands. You have your cars and your Mad Max vehicles, and you build them up and strap rockets to them and go to town. Yeah, those type of games really just speak volumes to me. But when it comes to sci-fi games, what speaks out to me the most is definitely the complexity. I definitely think complexity and the idea of having lots of bells and whistles, lots of buttons and switches, because to me that makes it feel, you know, like you're at a dashboard and you have all these, you know, if you're piloting a spaceship, there's a lot of procedures you have to go through to pilot that spaceship, and That's the connection.
Yeah. Yeah, I've even, you know, there's the buttons and the tech and the lingo and stuff. And I've also, in science fiction games, I think what I would call gear porn. Like, it's cool to have the cool, powerful automatic blaster with the attachment thing, and then this thing and that thing, and the gizmos and stuff are like part of it. And you can have, you know, like we just played Shadow Dark tonight, and Shadow Dark is, they don't even have a hammer in literally in the game.
Right, yeah.
And the equipment list is like half a page or something. It's like a chart that's like half a page, because the designer was like, a sword is a sword, and I want to get to other things, and it's good for that, and it's very interesting, and that doesn't prevent someone from having other interesting items, and of course there's magic items in it and stuff, but it's not about all these really specific technical things that science, it's not about science, you know, but in science fiction you can have more of that, the hard reality of existence, which can include gizmos and gadgets and stuff.
Yeah, and gizmos and gadgets and stuff where you feel like Batman, because you have the you know, grappling hook that extends 30,000 feet and then can pull you up and can hold so many tons of weight, and there's a lot of, you know, technicalities that you can add to the rules and stuff, and add that crunch in. Like the system that I was looking at most recently in depth is the Lancer RPG, the mecha system, and how that you basically, like, the system itself is simple because you have 1d20 and then you have accuracies, which are 1d6, or difficulties, which are -1d6, and those are modify your rolls. But it, what makes the system complicated is this what they call the action economy, or rather the action paths that you can take as a character are interesting and complicated, and depending on what loadout you take with your mech, it unlocks new abilities and features that you can do very specific, very interesting things. Like, one attacks, you know, the software of a mech instead of attacking with hardware, and that and then you can do like control abilities that way. But yeah, like the complexity there through gameplay and actions is interesting. And that to me is like how that game has complexity, but it comes back to sci-fi that way to me, because I don't know, there's something about complexity just makes me think, oh yeah, this is definitely not just, you know, thugs in the woods. This sure is much more complicated.
Science
than that now.
Science is complex and reality is complex, but fantasy is I feel like it's more primal, more spiritual, more of an intuitive, artistic kind of energy. I think you could have that with science fiction, but, you know, you can have an element of it that is hard-coded into reality, whether that's a cyberpunk, you know, car chase, or whether that's a, you know, jetpack gangs on, you know, on a planet or something. Whatever it is, goes back to some element of reality, like that hard, hey, gravity's here.
Right, yeah.
Technology's here. The limits of energy, you know, all this kind of stuff, you know. But, well, okay, so I thought I knew that it was X-Wing was kind of your pathway into science fiction with that. Not to say that you weren't into science fiction before that, but tabletop, but I think that means I was your first science fiction game master, I think, then. Your first game then would have been Starfinder, I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and Starfinder definitely had it in spades when it comes to complexity. I don't think either of us really understood it by the end of the session.
Three different armor classes. I think we did that, right? Let's just pick this one. I don't know. Yeah. Two different damage. I don't know.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I've now come full circle where I realize the complexity isn't necessary, at least not in all terms of the game. You don't need that to have the same sci-fi. In fact, some of my favorite science fiction falls back into more of a science fantasy, where it's like, you know, you get like lizards with laser guns. Yeah, that's just as much fun as anything else.
Coming soon to itch.io.
it's probably out there. What are you talking about? Yeah. That's the one thing about RPGs, as how malleable they are with the subjects that they cover. And there's just so many different variables of what that
I gotta throw out. Actually, too, with that, I think immediately it made me think like it doesn't have to be complex, and that is absolutely true. But also, a major distinction between Starfinder and the original science fiction game, role-playing game that is about things you can do in Starfinder. The difference is not that one is less complex than the other. It's that in Starfinder, the complexity is on your character sheet. And in the original science fiction role-playing game where you can travel around in starships, it is in the world and in the mind of the referee and the players. And that's still important. Like, you still... So, for example, in the original game, you have to still know how gravity works and how speed works, acceleration and space and, you know, so you have to understand Newtonian physics, and you have to, you know, force equals mass times acceleration. You have to have this basic idea of how space works, but that's not on your character sheet. But yeah, in Starfinder, it is complex on your character sheet. And
I just want to add that you probably could put it on your character sheet, though. You know what I mean? Like, you make a cheat sheet for yourself.
That's
so you
true,
know that
too.
IP per second per second make... score. Or, like, you could add all that stuff back on.
And then...
Which I would probably need to do as a Dungeon Master if I were going to do that, because I'm not going to do math.
Yeah, life. And then you can do things like Star Wars, where you can just be like, we're just not going to worry about gravity, ever. Every planet's the same. Every planet has one biome and absolutely no more ever. It's an ice planet. It's a jungle planet. It's a city planet, you know. And you just don't worry about those things. And it's still fun sci-fi, but... okay, so then you played Starfinder, and then I think I game mastered your next one. I think your next one was Star Wars Westin Games D6, I think, right?
I believe we tried the Outlaw Void.
Oh, we tried to make science fiction work in 5th edition. And if you can tell from the tone of my voice that that's about as far as I want to go into that.
My character died. Yeah, I know that much. we'll take a short take a drink and we'll
you just saw me take a drink. Moving on, don't try to make 5th edition a science fiction game. Just don't. There are plenty of science fiction games out there. Just do it. Just do a science fiction game. There's a ton of them. They're great. More on that in the podcast in the future. Well, anyways,
nice.
And then Star Wars Westin Games D6, and then I got to play that solo with you. It seemed like you. I think you ran that for some people too.
Yeah, I ran Star Wars D6, Westin Games D6, quite a bit. I love the system.
What do you love about it?
It's one of my favorite systems, actually. It's simple, I guess, but it still captures that gravitas of Star Wars. And what I like most about it, actually, is probably the fact of, like, hero points, and like how, like, if you are a hero, you basically get free tokens for stuff, to win the game is to do good stuff, basically. And then if you do bad stuff, your character becomes an NPC. I think that's...
Yeah, the Force is super interesting in that way. Yeah, I do love that. Man, I do love that. Yeah, totally.
Yeah, that's about it. But, I mean, it's simple dice pools. It's pretty easy to pick up. And you don't even... I don't know. This is me. When it comes back to me, personally, I don't even... When I'm explaining a new game to somebody, I don't tell them all the rules. I just, like, hand them dice and then narrate what happens afterwards. Because I'm more of a story gamer myself, so, like, to have that be part of the game is like, okay, just pick up these dice, roll that dice. Okay, this is what happens. And we move on. And they don't need to know that they're rolling perception or...
Let's not even go too far into Star Wars Western Games D6, because let's just do like a whole episode where we just talk about that game. You know, like we're talking the original science fiction... We're talking about the original Star Wars tabletop role-playing game, which was the major source of lore for Star Wars, because for the longest time, Return of the Jedi came out, and then there was a drought. There were some novels, and then finally in the 1990s, Lucas, like a bunch of authors, picked up the license, and Lucas allowed a lot of novels to come out, and we had a whole... You know, Star Wars was back, and then it hit the screens again by 1997, and of course, by 1998, Lucas was back with, like, Episode 1, and Star Wars was totally back, but for the longest time after Return of the Jedi, there was nothing, and, but then they had, Tales of the Jedi, which was a supplement for Star Wars Western Games D6, and Star Wars Western Games D6 already had different splat books, it already had lore. I'm sorry, I'm talking about it now. But we'll do like a whole episode. But the important thing is that one splat book had the lore that would guide, and Lucas would adhere to it. He would adhere to that lore, although he didn't do that in many of the other books. So that's why we have things like the Jedi Code and the Sith. And almost everything we know about Star Wars now, a lot of it came from that role-playing game, which is wild. And then, of course, it's just cool. Just a lot of stuff there. Okay, sorry. Yes, I love that. I'm with you. I love that game also. So let's see. And then what kind of stuff have you done with science fiction since then? Or what do you want to do? What direction do you want to go in with science fiction?
Oh, man, there's a lot of things I want to do. But I think like the first one I really want to do is I still want to play that Fallout game I want to play, because Fallout is kind of science fiction in a lot of ways. I know people say it's post-apocalyptic, but there's a lot of science fiction stuff in there. I want to do that. And now I really just want to play Star Wars again.
Totally.
Because now we've been talking about it, but I really did want to play Lancer a bit. Now I had a hard time trying to play Lancer with actual people, because from my experience, finding people that actually play Lancer is really hard. People like to talk about the game and sometimes have that armchair discussion about the game. And then other people, it's just not I don't know how to talk about it nicely. It wasn't for me, and it was very sad to have that feeling, because it's not very often that happens in RPGs. Usually in RPGs, you say, hey, I want to play this game, and then you find people that want to play that game with you. And sometimes you have to go outside of your friend group to do that. You know, not every friend group is going to want to play every type of game, but to have, like, to go outside of my friend group and still not find it, it was
kind
of, it's the first time I've ever actually met
I've had that experience in the brand game where people enjoy just talking about builds and theorizing and theory crafting and stuff, and maybe in other games other than tabletop role-playing games, but when you talk about something indie, something kind of small, a cottage industry game, usually if you go out and you find people talking about it, they are playing it. Like, if you find people talking about Swords and Wizardry, they're playing Swords and Wizardry. Or they want to be playing it. One of the... oh, man, you have that and you want to play it. You have Morkborg? I've been looking for people to play Morkborg. You know, like, if they're that passionate, they're probably, in on it. But it sounds like that's just an interesting part of that subculture. I don't know anything about it. I'm not interested in Lancer. I've thought about mech stuff, though. I've thought about the original. I don't know if it's like literally the original, but you know, the kind of granddaddy BattleTech. I've thought about trying it out. And there's a couple
BattleTech, the war.
Yeah, and so it has some tie-in role-playing games. Actually, BattleTech has MechWarrior Destiny. Nice. There's two actually, MechWarrior Destiny and. I forgive me out there, anybody that's listening, and you know the other, but there's MechWarrior Destiny, and I think BattleTech something or another, MechWarrior 4 or something, and there's one that's a little more crunchy, and it ties in well to the tabletop game, so it's like Lancer in that way, and that like the mechanics are more compatible with, you can go from role-playing to, okay, now we're on the battlefield and we're going to do a war game. And then there's MechWarrior Destiny is like super loose, and it's very like a story game. I've thought about it. I don't know. It's back there. The giant robots that fight each other is, I mean, that's just cool.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's definitely cool. I have looked at BattleTech a few times. When it comes to actual tabletop war games, I don't like to play online. I like to play in person. So, trying to find an actual group of people to do that was, I had no luck there either, but I did think about it. I actually almost bought a couple starter sets for BattleTech the war game. I would be interested. Just putting my hat in the ring here. If you're gonna run BattleTech, just let me know when. I'll probably jump in that. Just to scratch that itch.
Giant robots. I mean, they're cool. What other kind of science fiction stuff? Well, we were gonna run. Actually, your homebrew system, and we're going to do a Star Wars campaign. We had to end it. I can't remember what happened, but something happened where we needed to end it, and it felt like a momentary interruption. And then, tragically, our friend actually died, like the person that was playing in it. It was going to just be me and him. I was really excited about that game. And we were so silly. I was a Celestian, and I was just this dude, and he was just a beep boop robot, man. And that was it. It was just me and my robot buddy, and we were gonna have shenanigans in space.
Yeah, I believe he wanted to be a Jawa, but the tragedy there.
That's right. He was a Jawa.
Yeah,
that's right.
Yeah, but I think it was just illnesses that That's got in our
was.
Way.
It was me. It was my fault because I've had those health problems and I had to stop, I think. It was me. Yeah.
But either way, that game fell through. But when it comes to RPGs and what I want to do as far as sci-fi goes, I definitely want to play some Star Wars. And I want to do something complex, and I don't know what it is yet.
Yeah.
But I even thought about something like GURPS or something. If I'm going to go complex, go as complex as it gets.
Yeah,
right?
I know what you're... Like, it goes back to what you were...
I'm not going
to
do no role masters.
It's like what you were saying in the beginning, right? Like, science is complex, and it definitely makes sense, like, in a big, giant fighting robot game, because that was my complaint, again, about the brand game, which every once in a while I'll complain about here, which is that I'm supposed to be a mythical, kind of imaginative... kind of this mythical hero that a young child might think of, a person with a sword, Conan the Barbarian or something. And I didn't feel like that. I felt like I was someone behind a control panel of a mech pressing buttons and waiting for them to activate and waiting for my turn. And I always felt that way. And we've found games since where I don't feel like that at all. And it's amazing. But now I'm like, wait, what if I could be, what if I could have a control panel? And I've thought about that, like, is there, you know, a thing like Lancer, like where you could be ace pilots or, something that's very technical or like Halo ODST, you know, where you're like in a battle suit or Starship Troopers or something and you have weapons and you're counting ammo and you have different ammo types like Judge Dredd or RoboCop or something, you know, and science fiction can be that connection to the physical world. And that would be cool.
And then it could just be, you can also just break limits that way too. I think, like, when I think of fantasy, I often think of Lord of the Rings and think of the Shire and think of this nice, quaint place. But then when I think of science fiction, I think of, like, Pacific Rim, where it's, like, this giant robot just, like, wailing on this Godzilla-sized monster and it just being, you know, cataclysms everywhere. Or, like, like Halo, where it's, like, entire planets are getting glassed and it's, like, oh my gosh, this is insane. Like, the scale there is also different, too. I feel like science fiction is so much more vast, and there's so much more playground, and like everything's elevated as far as scope and size. I think that's also important. Like, if you think of Expanse and how, like, the moon is, like, a whole region right. of, like, the you know, the politics there, and Mars has its own politics, and, like, how that is, like, the scope and size of that is just dramatized, and that's interesting to me, and that's a good place to play around when it comes to science fiction and the stories that you can tell.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. Any other kind of science fiction stuff coming up or with you? Anything that you've been thinking about or projects or anything?
No, but I'm interested to hear what's on your back burner.
Yeah, so we'll talk about other stuff on the podcast for sure. Just as a preview, White Star RPG is coming right after this one. So I won't even go into it here because we're going to go into it in tremendous detail with both some game designers and my own review and actual plays and all kinds of stuff. White Star RPG is, for me, the ideal Dungeons & Dragons in space. If you're going to, if you want six attributes of hit points in an armor class, don't do the modern game. If you want to go in space... is what I'm saying. Now there's Starfinder, okay, and that I've if you really want something very complex, Starfinder is that. But if you want something a lot looser, White Star is D&D in space, and it's amazing, and it's cheap, and it's by an indie artist, and it's beautiful. And then we've got Classic Traveler, which is the original science fiction role-playing game where you travel around in spaceships, and there are very credible rumors that Firefly and The Expanse were both entirely based on Classic Traveler campaigns. And playing it, it feels like that. In fact, I would say it's exactly the middle between Firefly and The Expanse is what it feels like. So that's been going on. I've been having a great time. We've played Metamorphosis Alpha, which is literally the first science fiction role-playing game ever. And one player played a flying, teleporting panda bear that could telepathically communicate with people, and it was crazy. It was absolutely weird, and they communicated with, like, spiky porcupine creatures on a massive world ship. I don't know. It's even too hard to even explain here. We'll talk about Metamorphosis Alpha. So I've been doing some science fiction. What do I want to do? a mech warrior. I want to do giant robots that fight each other. So it's going to be mech warrior or Battletech or a combo of that. I am kind of leaning toward the crunchy one. The one where I'm like, I'm going to figure out Battletech and do a role-playing game with it. I want to try to... I'm thinking about it. But that's a big investment. Like, you can't just, like... Like these other games where I just shoot from the hip and use my imagination, I think I got to really kind of understand Battletech will be a hill to climb, which is exciting in its own way.
Yeah, it will be, yes. But it's even, I would say it's a very steep climb if you want to get into the lore, too. I think it has one of the most vast lore systems of any IP I've ever tried to get into. I was like, ooh, Warhammer's interesting. Ooh, Warhammer's very dense. Yeah. I'm not getting into that. It's like, ooh, Battletech's interesting. Ooh, it's also really dense.
Yeah, I love that. And I don't mind messing it up. You know, I'm willing, and I'll tell people if I run the game, listen, I'm not a Battletech expert, but I'm here to enjoy it and learn, and you got to be willing to deal with an unreliable narrator, I guess, because, you know, and I do also love Warhammer. And speaking of crunchy, like, there's a ton of stuff in Warhammer, including role-playing games. So eventually, Glenn was going to run Wrath and Glory. We ran Rogue Trader. We did a 4 or 5 session stint of Rogue Trader. It's a very complex game, all kinds of weapons and maneuvers and all kinds of stuff that you could do. And then, but we didn't keep playing. I was very surprised by that game because I thought I wouldn't like it. I like Warhammer. I didn't think I would like the complexity. And then I got into the complexity, and I was like, ooh, I kind of like this, actually. and the players didn't like the complexity. And I was astonished. I was like, oh, well, Okay, cool. I walked away from that with a very weird feeling. I thought the people I picked would be really into the game, and I would actually end up being like, I'm gonna call this here and just do this one adventure, and it was the opposite. But it was still satisfying. And anyways, there's that. I've been looking at, well, forgive me, everyone. There's the Free League game, and I can't think of it right now. Coriolis. There we go. I don't think I want to run it, actually. I'm very surprised. I've got all kinds of Free League stuff, and maybe somebody can convince me otherwise. They're about to release a big expansion for it. I don't think I want to run it. That Coriolis is like one of the big brand name kind of science fiction games. If you were going to do something other than D&D, other than Starfinder and stuff like that. And then we were going to do like a tour of the old school. We were going to do Star Frontiers, which was TSR's answer to Traveler. And I played Star Frontiers once. You can be like a Gumby. You remember Gumby? You can be like a putty guy that can like slide under doors, but also holds a blaster. It was this kind of like, I don't know, like vintage pop sci-fi kind of thing vibe going on. And that was fun. Yeah that was fun. I enjoyed that. And then there was, oh, Gamma World, which to me is Fallout. Like, we were going to do post-apocalyptic. We were going to do Gamma World, but that's kind of slowed down. So, and then there was one other one up on the horizon we were looking at. I don't know if we're going to get to it. I've been pretty satisfied, though. I know there are a lot of indie sci-fi stuff out there. Like, you know, you did Pirate Borg. There's also Cyborg, which is, And I mean, there's a ton. Obviously, the indie scene has just endless fractals of and permutations of things out there. Speaking of... Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say, my favorite discovery in the indie gaming scene as far as sci-fi goes is actually 5 Parsecs from Home, which is a solo skirmish game. I think it's marketed as a solo adventure game.
Man, I really like it. It's kind of like I really need to try it.
It has like some journaling elements. Like the first half is like maintenance. Okay, I'll say there's a pre-game, a game, and a post-game. So, like, the pre-game is, like, you have to, like, make sure your ship is fueled up, and you'll get, like, assignments on the board, like, your bounty board or whatever, and then you'll, like, roll up your encounter, and then you play through the encounter, and then afterwards it's like, all right, who got hurt, who's going to be out for the count, who needs to go to the med bay, you know, how much is that going to cost, oh my gosh, are we going to even be able to make it off this planet, and it's just, like, this really fun cycle that you can go through like a session in an hour and then you never have to play again, or you can like continue this journey with this crew, and it just feels so nice. And as a solo game, I've just gotten so much out of it. I've also like done my own little like fanfic, like I wrote like a 2,000 words just talking about how much, you know, I love this game and played it through, and to me, I get a lot of enjoyment out of that. But before we move on, I was gonna ask you, what do you think? Like, what's the difference mechanically between White Star and Traveler, Classic Traveler, as far as mechanics go? What's the vibes like as far as White Star goes? I know you said we're not talking about it.
Yeah, those are two different questions, so. Mechanically, they're actually the same. I know some people are going to scream when they hear me say that, but hear me out. except that one uses a 2D6 core resolution and one uses a D20. But other than that, Mark Miller stated that, you know, when he was at university, he really wanted Dungeons and Dragons, but in space. And I'm trying to think of his name. The guy that did Metamorphosis Alpha, James Ward. Unlike Jim Ward, who really did just do Dungeons and Dragons, original D&D, and did it in space and just tweaked it, he truly made a science fiction simulator. Whereas original Dungeons & Dragons will simulate a sanctuary, hirelings, medieval weapons, wilderness exploration. The very, very original game, of course, used different products to do that. It used chainmail and wilderness survival and stuff, but ultimately it had all those phases of play for a medieval adventure game. Traveler has all of the stuff in one game in a very thin book for a science fiction adventure game, and it's coded completely on actual science fiction: starships, acceleration, gravity, planets, stellar bodies, like the difference between, for example, gas giants, asteroids, planets, suns, and it does it all in just that many pages, very thin. You all can't see that, but it's very, very thin. So it became essentially the core of all science fiction simulation that was to come. That is to say, Elite in 1984, and then eventually things like X-Wing, TIE Fighter, Wing Commander, Star Citizen, Starfield. Everything about science fiction that we have to think today came from that. So they're mechanically the same. The vibe is that Dungeons & Dragons is about taking swords into scary places and holes in the ground to get treasure and evade or fight dragons and stuff. And Traveler is about being on a starship and having adventures in space.
My question, what I meant to say was, is what mechanics do they have that invoke those feelings? And like, how does that feed back into it? You know, like you said, they're mechanically very similar, but if they are these vastly different games with these different philosophies and game design, how do the mechanics feed back into that?
Yeah, so I have to make a distinction there really quick. First of all, I'm talking about classic Traveler versus modern Traveler, although they're very compatible. That can't be said of modern D&D and classic D&D. But that's an important distinction because if you're listening and you are coming from the modern game, as I often say, and you're looking at indie games and folk RPGs and stuff, which is what we cover here, some of these classic games have a completely different approach. And so if you play a classic game the way you would a modern game, it won't work. You have to take some of the basic assumptions that you have about the game, you have to flip them 180 degrees sometimes. And one of the basic assumptions is that in a modern game, you can look at the character sheet and you can understand how the game works. But in original Dungeons & Dragons, that was not the case. And so this answers the question is, in original Dungeons & Dragons, you don't look at strength to determine how a bonus when you roll a strength check to overcome a strength challenge. Instead, it faces the world. You know, an original D&D character can fit maybe on an index card, but you have a check to determine if you can bend bars, which is a feature of dungeons, because dungeons are what you're there for and what you're doing. And there are alterations to mechanics that only a fighter can benefit from a strength check. And that's true of classic Traveler. So anyways, I say this to say there's no discrete mechanic that is like in the modern games, where it's like, well, we always roll this and this is your bonus to do the thing. That's not how it worked. So in classic Dungeons & Dragons, you had checks for checking a room, bending bars, forcing doors open. You had checks for dungeons and for the wilderness, like how far in the wilderness would something appear. And that was based on yards, because it was a medieval fantasy world, right? In Traveler, you have a check that every check is based on this space simulation. So you arrive in a solar system from a jump, and it's assumed that you're going to spend 1 week in the solar system. One day per space travel, you'll roll a d6 to see if you encounter a ship. 2d6. And then if you encounter a ship is based on the space traffic in that solar system. and the solar systems are divided into what the primary starport would be. And the primary starport is starport type A, B, C, D, E. And so if you're in a backwater, you're much less likely to encounter a ship. And it's going to change the type of ship you encounter. So you can see how that's science fiction obvious, right? Like that's the expanse, right? In Dungeons and Dragons, you have a chance of encountering an owlbear in a wilderness. I don't know. That sounds really obvious, right? But like that's the difference mechanically. And then,
right. So like you're saying that the procedures of White Star is.
Oh, I'm sorry. You're asking about White Star. I thought you were saying D&D versus Traveler.
Oh no, yeah.
Oh, I was talking my
about
bad.
White Star specifically because you said not to talk about it, and I was like, okay, well, let's talk about that.
White Star is just a real loose kind of NSR kind of approach to original D&D. It's not like original D&D. It's the actual rules of White Star could probably fit on a page or two. It's kind of more like Morkborg in how simple it is. You've got two dice in the entire game, a D20 and a D6. The D20, you have a universal discrete resolution mechanic, and one of the features of White Star is the bonuses are very, very tight. You never have more or less than a -2 to a +2, and you're not doing a bunch of checks all the time. It's like Morkborg. You know, like if you're playing Morkborg and you're doing a check every encounter, you're just going to have a bunch of dead characters. You should be interacting with the fiction, and if you're coming from the modern game, you might think of the checks as more like saving throws. Like you're not going to do those unless the player's skill has run out and now they have to rely on their luck, and their luck's not going to be very good. And White Star's like that. And you have a skill system where the skills are all on a D6, and they always have this D6 range. So if you're a technician or a pilot or something, you're always going to be rolling a D6 for your gimmicks that you can do.
Right, so your feats are like X's
abilities. Yeah, and then the raw stuff is always a D20, and that's just about the entire game. And because you only have a D6, every weapon in a game is only D6 minus 1, D6, D6 plus 1. Some weapons are 2D6 if they're really powerful, and it's such a simple game. Like, there's really not much else to the whole game. And as you know, as you've ran these types of games, you don't need much else. Like,
I think the fun thing is, as a home brewer, is you can take the things you like and
man.
You mix and match them. You take this resolution mechanic, take this procedure, mix match them.
I took the
there we go. Slap on this
I
IP.
I took the sci-fi tables for items from Index Card RPG, because if you have Index Card RPG Master Edition, there's just tables of like D100 sci-fi wacky weapons that you can pick up. And to me, Dungeons and Dragons is about loot. It's about getting stuff, and or as Runehammer calls it, a treat, I think, or whatever. You know, like there's a prize that you need to get. And so I used into ICRPG stuff in White Star, and fully intend to keep doing it. By the way, that's the base system I use for Outlaw Void now, is White Star. So if I'm running a White Star game, it's set in the Outlaw Void universe.
Nice. Which is the universe we're in now?
I don't know where we are now.
I don't know either. They keep explaining it to me, but everything they have is just doesn't make sense. 5 light years plus glibluck.
I know, right? Like they'll give me part of it, but then they don't go all the way. And it's like in this place when I ask for ketchup, they get so mad. And that.
Yeah, I think we missed some like cultural thing about the ketchup. Like I think there's probably some war or something about the ketchup because there's no reason you should be that mad about ketchup.
I don't know. I hope we can find a way home. Anyways, thanks for chatting with me, Jake. It is good to see you again.
I'm glad we found each other. Do you want the rest of these?
Nope.
I know you said they're not peaches, but I'm pretty sure they're peaches. Oh.
No.
Oh, here.
Oh, God.
Me?
Mythic Mountains RPG is a private online play club that focuses on folk RPGs. Folk RPGs are the games that belong to all of us. They're what actually happens at a table between friends. It's their voice that has the authority on what is fun and what works for them. Weekly, we upload our games to allow others to sit in with us. The channel isn't monetized. We don't own the artwork, music, software, or games shown in these actual plays, and you can find links to their authors in the description. Like, subscribe, and share if you wish, or don't. Just like games in person, you're welcome to pull up a chair, sit in, and watch some of our games. No performances, no fancy equipment, just regular people playing folk pencil and paper role-playing games and having a good time. We hope these games will prove a source of enjoyment to anyone just wanting to listen in, anyone looking for examples of how actual groups run and play folk RPGs, and most importantly, if you haven't found your group yet, you're welcome here at ours.